Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we are joined today by quite a regular guest for the program, which is Marybeck Councillor Sue Bolton, who is a member of Socialist Alliance and is also going to be running as a candidate for the seat of Broadmeadows for the upcoming state election on November 2026. So I want to kind of, I guess we wanted to have Sue on the program to have a bit of a discussion about, you know, probably one of the concerning elements about Australian politics right now, which is the kind of rise of One Nation. And given that Sue is a Victorian state election candidate, you know, One Nation is obviously going to be playing a big role in this upcoming state election. It is kind of predicted. I mean, I've been hearing kind of reports, you know, from people I know on the left that, you know, One Nation is likely to win a number of seats in the upcoming Victorian state election. And if you look at the kind of the polling results, it's very probable that One Nation will win some seats. It will definitely be winning some seats in the upper house. And of course, one of the contexts for the rise of One Nation, and you can also see this in Angus Taylor's budget reply speech, has been this kind of normalisation of this argument around immigration. And in fact, this normalisation is actually happening. I think I've noticed that you notice that even ABC and SBS is sort of normalising this argument. We're currently in a housing crisis, and the kind of scapegoat for this has been the so-called high rate of immigration. And so Sue, I kind of wanted to hear your comments about your comments on the rise of One Nation, but also a counter to this sort of, you know, this racism that is sort of building up against against immigration.
Well, I mean, the rise of One Nation is clearly disenchantment with the actual impact of neoliberalism, which we've had neoliberal economic policies, which have had since the 80s, this form of capitalism, which has caused, you know, incredible harm to people. Not that necessarily people would recognise, people at large would necessarily recognise that's the cause of all the pain they're experiencing, but that is where the cause comes from, you know, the privatisation, the cuts to services, etc., and the increasing percentage of the wealth that keeps going to, you know, the top 1% in Australia. So that, and really, if you look at the chart, up until the 1980s, the wages share of Australia's gross national income kept increasing, and the profit share kept decreasing, and that changed from the 1980s, and actually it changed with Labor government policy of trying to control controlling unions, which they succeeded in doing. So ever since the 1980s, the profit share has kept going up and the wages share has kept going down. So year on year, it's at, you know, record-making levels. And so that's what we've had. And then in a situation, you know, where we have the whole rise of Trump and right-wing politics in the US in particular, because that does have an impact in Australia, people have, I think, even from the first Trump presidency, that sort of gave people who are more right-wing in their outlook, they might not have been part of the far right as such, but, you know, more right-wing in their outlook, the permission to be racist and to be explicit and open and vocalise racism and other prejudice, et cetera. And, you know, that, of course, heightened during COVID. And now, you know, you have seen that the One Nation didn't get that high a vote, really, in the last federal election, and the vote was split between One Nation and other far-right parties. I think now you can see as the coalition is crumbling and coalition voters and even some MPs and Liberal Party members are defecting to One Nation, I also think a section of the ruling class is thinking, well, we need to jump on board, which is what happened in the United States as well. Jump on board because they want a party that's right wing that they can promote that's going to be anti-worker and support their profit making and maintaining capitalism in Australia for them. And so I also think there is a significant amount of ruling class backing for One Nation. Might not be out in the open apart from Gina Reinhart, but, you know, that layer is there, and they're really promoting One Nation and giving resources to One Nation because they want a right-wing party to prop up, even if maybe One Nation might not have been their original preferred option. And then I think, you know, basically politicians, right-wing politicians, have been using migration and trying to, you know, confuse people about what the cause of the housing crisis is. So they're really just using migrants as a scapegoat to let them off the hook. And that's really what One Nation and so forth are doing, and the Liberals, et cetera. They're just letting politicians off the hook because politicians, on one hand, want to see house prices keep increasing. They don't want to see house prices fall, depending on the context in which they're talking. And then the same politician in another time will be crying about how housing is too high for young people to get a chance. But then the next breath they'll be talking about how they don't want the price of housing to fall. So they're not... They don't care. They just want the market to rip, and they do know that the population, working class, but other parts of the population are divided between those who might own housing and have a mortgage paid off and be doing okay, and those who are struggling with a mortgage or struggling with rent. And so, there is an element of, you know, some people who are homeowners who might have big mortgages who don't want to see their house prices fall because if they ever have to sell, they want to be able to cover the mortgage and have some left over. So that's the scenario. But migrants are being blamed for absolutely everything, and yet... migration has no impact on housing at all. Like, because we saw during the COVID crisis, migrants are forced out of the country. New migrants weren't allowed to come into the country. International students had to leave Australia. Tourists weren't able to come here. And so if migration was the cause of the housing crisis, we would have had dirt cheap housing in Australia at that time. I mean, house prices did and rent prices did come down a little bit, but not that much really. And so that's the experiment that shows that migrants are not the cause of the housing crisis. It is the way that a capitalist market works. That's the cause of the housing crisis and the lack of refusal of government to build public housing and the destruction of public housing.
So, Sue, it's Mary here. Good morning, Sue.
Hi.
So that brings us to the next point, which you sort of touched on. How can we solve... What are the genuine ways to solve the housing crisis?
Well, I think the most important thing... which was done in Australia after the Second World War, when there were, you know, up until the period where government started to build public housing, there were massive homeless camps in every city around Australia and probably country towns as well. There were massive homeless camps. which is what we're seeing again. And it was really only the intervention of government, especially when soldiers were returning from the war, and also needing workers to live near particular industry, that government started to build a massive amount of public housing. So there were slum clearances in when that public housing was built. So, you know, and I don't know all of the history of the slum clearances. I'm sure some of them are probably fairly brutal, but I don't know that history. But really, the building of public housing would have had a downward pressure on the cost of housing. And I think that is what would happen today if we had a government that was governments that were prepared to build a massive amount of public housing. You'd start to put a lid on house prices. I mean, there are other things that have also had an impact on house prices and so forth as well. The tax issues of negative gearing and capital gains tax and all of that has had an impact on house prices. But the other big thing that's had an impact on house prices is developers and speculators. And once upon a time, the opening up of land for development was done by a public agency, a publicly owned agency. Now it's just private companies. And the private companies deliberately triple out land when they've got land to subdivide and so on and so forth. They trickle it out so that it keeps the price of housing up high, so they keep people desperate for housing. So it's none of the house prices by accident. It's deliberate manipulation of the market. Then you get all of these developers who get permits and councils, and they sit on the land for years, wait for the value to increase, and then sell it off at a killing without building anything. And they sell the land with a permit, which I think should be banned. They should be forced to sell just a vacant lot with no permit being transferred to the new owner. They just deliberately manipulate the market. And Prosper, which is sort of like an economics kind of group, not a prominent one, they've probably got the best data on housing that's left vacant for more than 12 months, both houses and apartments. And I think that, I haven't looked at the figures for a while, but something like over 10% of dwellings are vacant more than 12 months. And they can work that out. It's not like the census. It's they work it out on the basis of, has someone used the utility in that dwelling in the last 12 months? So have you turned on the tap? Have you turned on the electricity? Have you turned on the gas? And that's actually pretty good assessment of what is a genuinely vacant dwelling, which could, you know, they're left vacant for all sorts of reasons, but the biggest reason is probably, apart from maybe, you know, well, I mean, holiday homes would have utilities turned on at least once a year, but, yeah, they're left vacant for, you know, assets to increase in price, which is housing being used as a commodity.
Yeah. So, Sue, well, we're running a bit of our time now, and I guess you are running as a Socialist Alliance sort of candidate for Broadmeadows. Do you want to make some final comments about the upcoming state election campaign that Socialist Alliance will be running and the kind of vision for politics that they're putting in contrast to One Nation and the major parties?
Well, I think Socialist Alliance is running on the theme of fighting for people, not the billionaires. Because I think right at this moment, we need to finger who is the cause of the problems in society. And it is not migrants, it's the billionaires. Migrants are being blamed for everything under the sun at the moment, the housing crisis, but really anything that happens in society is being blamed on migrants at the moment. But it's the billionaires' control of the economy that is causing all of the problems we see in society. So that even if you look at something like the rights of people with disability and the NDIS cuts, you know, they're cutting, the government is proposing to cut really basic things that allow people with disabilities to survive and function in society, go to work, be able to get around, and all the rest of it. Meanwhile, the billionaires, they're all of these big companies in Australia, something like a third, pay $0 in tax. But meanwhile, a lot of those companies would get handouts from the government, or depending on what their source of their profit is, they might get roads and things built for them by the taxpayer, i.e. us. And every single person, everyone pays tax, even homeless people pay tax, because we all pay the GST and other taxes and so forth. So everyone pays tax, but the rich people are paying less as a percentage of tax than everybody else. And so that's really got to be our focus, is who is causing the issues. And the other thing that we're seeing is that Australia is putting more and more emphasis on the military spending and so forth. And the Victorian government is part of that. Okay, it's not to the same extent as the federal government, but the Victorian government is investing in weapons companies in Geelong. They're turning the old Ford factory into like a weapons headquarters of Victoria, a weapons manufacturing headquarters of Victoria. And so they're quite happy, the Victorian government and the federal government, to throw millions and millions and millions of dollars the way of the weapons manufacturing and towards the military. And meanwhile, people with disability are having their services cut. And the government is using, you know, this is the federal government rather than the state government, but it's the same party. They're using the word fraud to address people with disabilities. And I've been around long enough to see lots of campaigns claiming that people who are receiving Centrelink benefits are fraudulent. Sometimes they focus on single parents, sometimes on people who are unemployed. But frequently when they want to take away your rights, they focus on fraud. And yet all of these services are things that we've paid tax for, so that if you're in the situation where you need those services, whether it be NDIS or other disability services or a job seeker because you lost your job or single parents payment, you've got that because you paid your taxes for it.
Yep.
Or your family members paid taxes for it.
Thanks, Sue. We'll have to wind up there because we're running a little bit behind time. So much for speaking with us this morning. Good luck with the campaign.
No worries. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right. We're just speaking to Sue Bolton, Marybeck councillor and also social science candidate for the seat of Broadmeadows. Hopefully listeners enjoyed that interview. We'll just play a quick announcement and then we'll go through the activist calendar and then we'll go to our final interview for the program.